Good evening. James McCanny here with my Science Hour, going right into the show, February 11th, 2010. And in this time of rather dull news, let's put it this way, not a lot going on in the news. A lot of people are expecting something big to happen. It's just too quiet out there. It's like one of those old westerns. Remember the old westerns, and the good guys were sitting behind a rock, and they were waiting for something to happen, and the bad guys, or the Indians, whichever it was, remember the old westerns? They couldn't do that today, of course, but anyway, somebody would say, it's just too quiet for me out there. And then all everything would break loose just about then, and you know, the bad guys or the whatever was going to happen all of a sudden happened. But that expression, it's just too quiet for my liking, happened. That was probably almost every old cowboy western show. Well, that's the way it seems right now, at any rate. Hard to say, but at any rate, tonight's show, in this time of rather uninteresting news reporting, I'm going to do a show that's a little bit different. And this actually has arisen from somewhat of a personal experience that I had this past week in dealing with some people on a personal basis. And when I began to realize the human factors involved, the human psychology involved in these personal interactions, then it became apparent that this is going on in science. And so, at any rate, tonight's main science topic, I'll be dealing with the seven deadly sins as applied to science. And this deals with trust, paranoia, superstition, of course, the seven deadly sins of envy, pride, lust, greed, anger, sloth, and gluttony. Interesting. Now, when I'm critical of the science industry, as I call it, it's a science, really a business. Science has become big business, government funded at any rate. That's not the topic tonight. It's a rather subtle twist on understanding the personal dimensions of science. And when you understand it, then you'll see, for example, people say try and attack me, you'll never see them attacking my science because I'm right. NASA knows it. They're just trying desperately to find a way to copy it without saying they're copying it. But and they have their pawns out there. But what you get are unreasoned responses, personal attacks. That's the kind of attacks that are thrown at me. You know, and the people who are smart out there see this. They see through it. And as I said one night, I was on Coast to Coast, and there's a whole quantity of material out there trying to badmouth me. And so basically I said, George Norrie asked me, he said, how do you deal with this? I said, I use it as an educational tool, because people first see it and they go, oh, this McCanny, he's really a rotten guy. There's something wrong. He's, da, 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 the whole routine. But then as they become educated, as they go through the routine, as they listen to me, as they understand what's really going on in the world, once they finally catch on, then they go back and they look at that same site that convinced them that I was a terrible person, and they reread it and they go, wow, this is misinformation. This is what I've learned. I've learned something here, and it's an educational process. So by the same token, when one looks at the processes going on in science, there's an expression I coined a long time ago. It was called the axioms of astronomy. They're the four rules of the road, the basis that astronomers live by, that the Big Bang, the universe allegedly began in a Big Bang billions of years ago, that the universe is electrically neutral, that the solar system formed all at one time 4.5 billion years ago, and that comets are dirty snowballs. Those are the axioms of astronomy. Axioms in mathematics are principles that everything else starts from. There's a group of principles in mathematics called Peano's postulates, And they're basic, rudimentary rules that are simply written, and everything else has to follow from them. And if something were found wrong with those, all of mathematics would be in trouble. So they have to be correct, and mathematicians labor extensively over these postulates, these basic postulates, to make sure there's no possible flaw in them. And so at any rate, it's the same with the axioms of astronomy. Those the axioms that the astronomers have to follow, that the dirty snowball comet model, which none of them are correct. Not a single one of them is correct. There was no Big Bang. That is absolutely ridiculous, that all the matter of the universe was contained in something that's smaller than an atom and blew up and created everything, and here you are today. It's so absurd, it's beyond ridiculous. Yet it's held in every magazine, every popular science magazine that is on the racks, and you buy talks about this as if it were truth. The neutrality of the universe, the electrically neutral solar system, absolutely false. Electricity in the solar system is a dominant force, although very subtle. You have to understand how it works. And then on and on. So, but how can, you have to ask, how can these ridiculous, absolutely could not possibly be true axioms stay in place? Well, here come the seven deadly sins. And once you start seeing these, they're not just about personal interactions. They're not just about the way people interact with each other and cause pain and sorrow in each other's lives. It's about the interaction of humans in general. And when you get to, say, the politics of the international political arena, or you get to the secret services of the world spooking around, trying to find out, getting intel on someone else, trying to, get information so they can make decisions and do something evil against the other person, which creates paranoia on the other side and mistrust. And it just builds and builds until the world becomes this complex, absolutely ridiculous scenario of weirdness. That's what we're living in. You have a president who is a specialist in speaking with forked tongues. He says one thing, it means another. He says we're going to have health care, it means those health care pharmaceutical companies are going to get big money, and they're going to pretend like you're going to get health care, and it fools a lot of people. Like grandma's going to get her operation finally thanks to Obama. No, that isn't going to happen. Or take another example. Right now, Washington, D.C., this winter is experiencing the harshest record winter in history. Yet Obama sits in the White House covered with snow up to the peak of the dome of the White House and saying that there's global warming. Step outside, Obama. You know, take a look. Take a look outside your window. You know, it's just incredible. So that tells you the absolute denial. Then that's one of the big words, too, that comes right in there, is denial. I wrote an article, many decades ago, and about the denial of scientists. And that article has been widely read amongst people. It's in, I don't remember which book it's in. But it might be the Atlantis to Tesla book. I don't really recall. But it's on denial, the denial systems of scientists. But at any rate, that stems also from the seven deadly sins. And that's just human personality. So what we're talking about here are personalities. Personalities of scientists, and there's probably no group of people more arrogant and self-righteous than astronomers. They have even dared to say that astronomy is the most godlike of sciences because it studies the heavens and it's the most exacting of science, measuring the positions of stars, predicting the position of planets, etc. It's a very, and it is, astronomical instruments are extremely accurate. It's amazing once you understand Even amateur equipment is amazingly exacting. So the professional equipment is just amazing what they can do with it. Even the new equipment that nullifies the atmosphere from below with these huge monster mirror telescopes. It's truly amazing. Yet, all of this data, all of this information boils down to four axioms of astronomy that are totally wrong. And so how can this be maintained? Only through very bizarre behavior of human beings en masse. This is, and this is the other thing, it's a very interesting question. People say, how could all the astronomers be wrong? Well, it's because of peer pressure. If you don't agree, you're not in the group. Very simply, if you don't agree, you don't get a PhD. If you don't agree, you don't get an A in your astronomy class in college. How are you ever going to become part of the clubhouse if you disagree? Well, it's just not in the cards. And that's, of course, why they don't like me, one of the reasons, because I became independent. I found a way to exist, to present my science work to the world, and be independent. I don't depend on them. I don't depend on government contracts. I don't have somebody, some old professor leaning over my shoulder saying, this is what you have to say, and if you say this thing over here, we're throwing you out and you won't have any credibility in the clubhouse. So no, I don't deal with any of that. I built my own existence. I say things, I talk about them the way that I see them. And so I'm not involved in this seven deadly sins of science routine. I can think what I want to think. I create my own research. I design my own research. And I come up with my conclusions, and I can talk about them honestly and openly. If there's something that changes in my science, which really hasn't happened, because what I began with back in my early days in the 70s when I was creating the plasma discharge comet model and all of the other science data was coming in at the same time at Cornell University, where all of this kind of gelled, I was independent. I did not depend on being in their clubhouse. And it was very obvious. All the rest of those people at Cornell were in the clubhouse. They were NASA contracted people. They were professors at the university. And there was a very strict pecking order headed by none other than a guy named Carl Sagan, who gained great notoriety for being kind of a leader, almost like a spiritual leader. And that filtered down into the staff, the faculty at the university. And of course, they were dominant in the astronomy world around the world. So what they said had to go, and that filtered down into the rest of the world. So at any rate, before I get into this a bit deeper, I want to make a couple quick announcements. And in the astronomy world in general, this coming Saturday, the 13th, at 9 p.m. Eastern Time, there will be a meteor stream, the Capricornids. It's the Tri-Capricornids, or Chi, as some people call it, Capricornids meteor shower. And so that's a good time for everybody. It's in the winter time, so if you have clear skies Saturday night, kind of a fun family project, get out and take a look at the meteor streams this Saturday night, February 13th, 9 p.m. Eastern time. So calculate your time zone relative to that and just look up in the sky. So that would be 8 Central time. Everything should be dark then. We have a new moon, basically, so the moon should not be a factor. It should be possibly a good night to see some meteors. And that's always fun in the winter. It gets you outside when otherwise you really don't want to go outside if you're in the northern climate. This has been, we've been through a winter storm here, by the way, this past week. And yeah, it makes you want to move to some other, some tropic, makes the people here want to go to a tropical place. I guess that's, but I'm here and locked in to the northern climate at this point. But it's kind of fun too. I mean, you relax and enjoy it. Okay, the other thing that's happening is the moon is the farthest it's going to be from planet Earth all year. The moon goes through some cycles in its orbit, and of course it orbits the Earth once a month in its path with Earth around the sun, but there are variations, and this Saturday, the 13th, the moon will be the farthest away of any of its positions for the entire year. It'll be the farthest from Earth. Also, on the 16th, that would be next Tuesday, Jupiter and Venus have a rare conjunction. That means they are aligned in the sky visually. That does not mean they're aligned from the sun outwards. This is a visual alignment from a perspective of a viewer on planet Earth, us people here. And so, and it's low on the horizon, very difficult to see, but worth seeing. It's always fun to see Jupiter and Venus in conjunction. And another point about this is a rather rare, but not extremely rare, event, a planetary alignment of Jupiter and Venus. They happen all the time. That's a regular occurrence. But this low horizon conjunction of Venus and Jupiter on the 16th of February is rather rare, but not all that rare. Planetary alignments are not rare. And that is why, by the way, just to review a little Christmas, my Christmas lecture, it's important to understand that in no way, shape, or form could the a planetary alignment be considered as the Christmas star. Just absolutely absurd. But that's being promoted far and wide, kind of like the Mayan calendar in 2012 and all those other things that are just nonsensical, but being promoted for disinformation purposes. This idea that the Christmas star was related to a planetary alignment, absolutely ridiculous. And this is a great example. February 16th, next Tuesday, is just another example of a somewhat rare but very common planetary alignment. Okay, just one other quick thing here. Now, congressmen always pretend like they're doing something for you, but it tends to always backfire because they're a bunch of morons. They don't know anything. They're passing laws that really are counterproductive. And here's another one. Okay, this month, credit card interest rates, there's a law going in that the credit cards have to give a 45-day notice before raising rates. So what did the credit card companies do before Christmas? They raised all their rates to the maximum value. So they could raise them to the maximum value and keep them there, 22-23%. And what effect did that have on the public? It was devastating. People had to clear out their savings account to pay off their credit card debt because the interest rate went from a 7 or a 4% or 11%, whatever they were running their credit card, up to 23%. So it was an absolute, absolute, absolute disaster for the public. The morons in Congress cannot do anything right because they don't have a brain. They pretend like they're doing something for the public, but this was a windfall for the credit card companies, because guess what? Everybody ran in and paid off their credit card debt by unloading their savings accounts. And so it was a horrendous disaster for the common man. Anyway, I just want to make sure you understand that this law that is going into effect does not protect the public. It was a horrendous disaster for the public. Okay, on to the main science lecture of the seven deadly sins in science. And by the way, just a quick comment, the water filter sale that I had before Christmas was successful. People ordered water filters, and it's very important. It's my belief that every home should have a water filter. You should be water independent. When the electricity goes out, when the local water supply provided by the city goes out, If the electricity goes out and you live out in the country and you depend on a well, most wells are deep. You're not going to get that water out of that well. You're going to depend on surface water. How are you going to clean that water so that it's usable? People say, oh, well, I'll just boil it on the stove. Well, if we're talking utilities out, you're probably not going to be doing a lot of that, and it takes a tremendous amount of energy to boil water, and it's usually not effective because you have to get all of the water up to beyond the boiling point for a matter of time, and it's very difficult to get a good quantity of water up to the point where it is it's killing the bacteria. So at any rate, the simple solution is a water filter. And that's why I've gone out and found the best one on the market, bar none. It's called the Dalton water filter with four ceramic white filter elements. I use just one in mine, so that gives you three spares. Comes with the free Kato WRX 911 emergency radio. That's free, and free shipping to the 50 states. Normal price is $319. And I put them on sale for $289 before Christmas, and it was successful. But what happened is I got feedback from people that because it was pre-Christmas and they were buying presents for everybody, and they just didn't have money to buy the water filter at that time. So they asked me if I would extend the sale, and I said, okay, yes, that'll give them some time to buy the water filters at the reduced price, because I believe it's so important. So anyway, go to the web page or the mail order address, JMCC, P.O. Box 58, and I'll give this again at the end of the show, JMCC, P.O. Box 58, Navarre, N-A-V-A-R-R-E, Minnesota 55392. That's $289 for the Dalton water filter, stainless steel container, lasts a lifetime or two, and they make great gifts. They ship them to all over the world. These go everywhere. So, at any rate, onto the main science topic, the seven deadly sins of science. And, oh, I'm sorry, one other short, it's an apology. Last week, the February 4th show, I did the show, I posted it, as I always do, and this I did myself, excuse me, and then I tested it. So it was up on the archive, the radio show archive page. It was there and functioning, and all of a sudden it disappeared. It went away, so I have no idea what happened there. The announcement on the main homepage remained there for February 4th, talking about the show, but the link to the show itself disappeared. So, at any rate, I put it back up Monday, so if you missed last week's show, February 4th, and you usually listen to the archive, which many people do, then please go back and listen to it. I talk about archaeology and go a bit deeper into the idea that archaeology is a science where a great deal is unknown. Let's just put it that way, February 4th show. But anyway, the archive is there now and available to listen to. So I apologize. I have no idea what happened to the link to the show last week. It disappeared after I put it up there, and it's back there now. Okay. Superstition, trust, paranoia, denial. Okay. Once again, the seven deadly sins as defined in the Bible, the book that tries to tell us how to live, the seven deadly sins. Envy, pride, lust, greed, anger, sloth, gluttony. I have seen all of these in science and in scientists. It comes out in very bizarre ways. So I'm going to go through these one at a time. Envy. Let's talk about the envy that scientists have when their data comes in and it does not prove their theory, but it proves the theory of, say, my plasma discharge comet model. Envy. How can I pretend like my theory said this and add it to my theory and not give credit to that person over there? Envy. It's the denial. All of these involve denial, that amazing human trait to deny that you are doing something wrong. And so at any rate, envy. That envy the work of someone else. And then, of course, recognize that what you had done was incorrect as a scientist. And then try and steal the other person's work to include it with yours. Sometimes piecemeal, a little bit at a time, so it isn't obvious to everyone, but then you claim that it's a discovery that you made. This happens all the time. This has happened continually throughout my career, and I even have a name for it. I call it the creeping crud. The creeping crud. And okay, so that's the first seven deadly sin, and you see this in science. You see scientists hiding information from one another because they're envious. They don't want that other person to get information that's critical because they want to keep it for themselves. They will distort information and hand that out in place of real information. Take, for example, the UN report on global warming, where they gave out false information to the public. Made statements about the glaciers in the Himalayas melting by the year 2030 when there was no evidence at all. They just made that statement to try and promote their predisposed position of global warming. But now, then they came along. Once they got caught, this is the amazing thing. Here come the seven deadly sins. Once they got caught and it became obvious to the entire world that the UN panel had lied, had put out false information, they said, oh, but we have all this good data over here, which you have to believe that we have, because we're honest scientists, that we have all this data that supports our conclusion that there's global warming due to man's causes. And so it's like, you go, what? You put out intentionally bad information to try and fool the public, using your position as the UN Council studying this particular scientific phenomenon, and you used false information, put it out there, expecting the public to trust you because of your lofty position. When you're caught lying, when you're caught putting out false information, and it's obvious to everyone, then you go, oh, but we have all this good data over here, which you have to trust us is good and does support our position. Oh my goodness. Oh my goodness. What could these people possibly be thinking? Denial. And then denial, like a kid that got caught with his hand in the candy jar. Oh, Aunt Polly, I didn't take the cookie. It was Johnny who took it, and then he gave it to me, and then you caught me. Oh my goodness, this is so juvenile, it is beyond absurd. But these are internationally famous scientists doing this. Not looking at the truth, and then when they get caught, they try and cover it up. Envy, the first of the seven deadly sins in science. Pride, oh my goodness. You cannot find a more proud and arrogant person than a professional astronomer. They are right in what they proclaim. All they have to do is say it. They don't have to give a reason. They don't have to show why contradictory data doesn't support their theory. They can throw the data out. They don't have to depend on anything. What they say is correct because of their arrogance. There's a technique that is used, and I've seen this used repeatedly amongst scientists in meetings. They talk real loudly, and this, and this, and this, and blah, 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 and everybody's supposed to be quiet and listen to them because they're talking loudly, and this, and that must be true because because they're talking so loudly. And all they're doing is stating their opinion in a very loud manner. And that is pride. That is the sin of pride in science. Not using the facts, not using convincing arguments, not using data, but depending on everybody to listen to them because of how loud they're speaking and they're important. and their opinion must be true because they're talking loudly and they're arrogant about their position. Oh my goodness, do you see this in scientific meetings? And there are people who just try and dominate every conversation. And there are people that are, you know, they're deprived personalities. They have a very, very deprived personality. So what do? They replace that with boisterous, outraged, and then when it comes to, like, the basic parts of science, let me just refer to a story that I saw when I was at Cornell University. And the year is about 1981. Let's put it there. I'm at the end of my 2-year stay at Cornell. I'm going around and I'm talking to professors in various departments. And I had sent out a flyer, basically. And it went to all the faculty saying, I'm going to come around and talk to you because I want to see what you have to say as faculty members. Well, of course, the peer pressure came out immediately, and I knew it would, to peer pressure these faculty members. And I went and talked to everybody in all departments. They all knew who I was, and they all knew what my opinion was of the astronomy department and that the dirty snowball comet model was incorrect, et cetera, et cetera. And so I went into the geology department. And I was talking to the secretary, and the door of the chairman of the geology department, his door was open, and he heard me come in talking, and to the secretary, asking to talk to the professors in the geology department, and I heard him scream out, "This is the chairman of the geology department, Cornell University, 1981." He screams out, "Anybody that talks about this in this department will lose their tenure and no longer be a faculty member here." Whoa, okay. I guess we have an open mind. I guess we're going to talk science here. We're going to talk about the facts. Or is the domineering head of the geology department simply by proclamation, by screaming loudly, going to determine that this is incorrect, what I had to say was incorrect, and that nobody would be allowed to talk about it? Well, if it was so wrong, why would you be afraid? It would be obvious, and everybody would be able to tell you all of the problems with what you were talking about. But see, I was different. When you look at, say, let's take a look at Velikovsky. He wasn't a scientist. Also, around Velikovsky developed a lot of people who were good intention in some cases. Maybe they were notoriety seekers in many other cases, but some well intentioned, some not so well intentioned. But the point is that Velikovsky was surrounded by people who really were not well versed in space science. There was a couple guys who had like engineering degrees, who made some interesting contributions, but turned out to be incorrect. But be that as it may, the point was that when I reached that point at Cornell, I knew what I was talking about. The plasma discharge comet model, the source of electricity in the solar wind, and how all of this worked. So I had both barrels loaded with information, with my theories, with information, how it corroborated with data that came into Cornell University. I had all this in both pockets, let's put it that way. So I was ready, and I went to meetings with these guys all the time. They all knew who I was, and a lot of them didn't like me. A lot of them silently liked me. But I just wanted to recount that story of the head of the geology department at Cornell University screaming out of his door, and of course he wouldn't get out of his chair. He just screamed it out. "Anybody who talks about this in the geology department will be fired," basically is what he said. Quite an amazing statement from a scientist, the head of a department of geology at a major university. Pride. Okay, the second deadly sin. You see it all the time. Pride. Let's talk about another case. I was at a scientific meeting about a half a year ago. Maybe it was closer to a year ago. I was up in Toronto. at one of the international science meetings. And there was a guy there, always well-dressed, and he was a NASA scientist. And he was in a small group of people, and I overheard what he was saying. I wasn't trying to eavesdrop. I just happened to be there and was hearing him say that NASA had let him go. He had been put out to pasture, and he had probably spent 25 good years of his life working as a NASA space scientist. These are tough jobs to get. You just don't get them easily. They're very tough, and these guys hang in there for years and years and years. But he had been let go, basically put out to pasture. And he was still well-dressed, but you could tell in the tone of his voice, because I had heard him talk a lot of times, been to meetings where he had been speaking. I probably talked to him a few times myself. But that time, his voice was a bit different. It didn't have the pride in it. It didn't have the belief that NASA was immutable and all, you know, wonderful. He always walked around very fast, and he was always busy, and I was always doing a lot. So, I mean, this guy was a very active person with NASA, well-dressed. And a lot of the scientists are not well-dressed. In fact, to put it bluntly, they're pretty sloppily dressed, as you might expect from scientists. But science is not based on a wardrobe, how you dress. But this guy was. He was always very sharply dressed. And very articulate, very well received by all the colleagues, etc. So at any rate, I overheard him saying that he had been let go by NASA. The pride in his voice was no longer there. That agility, that youthful vigor, was not there anymore. And so there the pride had been lost. And I thought, gee, shouldn't the scientist be the same, whether he's employed or not, or let go or not? Shouldn't the vigor for his science remain the same? And in this case, it did not. You could tell that he felt let down, that he had been used, and that he had, given the best years of his life, and he deserved better than that. So at any rate, there again, that's just another kind of an inverse example of pride or lack of pride in the science world. Third deadly sin, lust. Lust for power. We see it in politics. We see it in the movies. We see it amongst movie stars. We see people in economics, CEOs of corporations lusting to overtake another corporation, to slam out the competition, the lust for a CEO. Listen, just look at the banking community this past over the bailouts, the lust for more money. Oh, give it to me. I want it all. While everybody else is squalling in the gutter, these guys are pulling in billions of dollars for their personal wealth. Oh, my goodness. Lust. Lust for money. Lust for earthly desires. Lust for taking care of me first so that I get the most and everybody else gets nothing. What a horrible, horrible seventh deadly sin. The third of the seven deadly sins. In science, the lust to keep your theory in place at all costs is amazing. It's in science. Now look at the closed loop of science. And I always talk about this. Government funding, the receipt of that government funding for particular scientific endeavors. Remember that a scientist does not go to the government and say, I want to study this. No. There's a list of acceptable topics that you can study, and you pick one, and then you go and get the money that is designated to that particular field, and you have people on top of this pyramid, scientists who have worked their way up over the years, over the decades, and they finally get up to the top where they're administering government money in grant programs. So the scientists apply, then they do the research, they get the research results, and then they publish. When the publication comes out, it advances knowledge, so to speak. But who actually is gaining by this? What is the system? The system is you play the game. You publish the results that are going to get you funding next year. You always want positive results. You never want to say that your topic didn't succeed. Why? Because you may not get funding next year. That's your main motivation. Funding, lust for power, getting your topic approved for publication. So what does that involve? You have a clubhouse. It's like there was a time when oil companies competed for price. There were gas wars, where gas companies would compete and try and undersell each other so you would go to their gas station. And finally they woke up and they said, that was when I was a kid. Does anybody remember gas wars? You would never hear about that now. The gas wars were literally, you could, the gas station down the street would drop its price and you'd go there, and then the next day the guy over there had lower price, so you'd go there. And it cut out the small guys, but the big guys could hang in there and stay with it and through the gas war. You will never see that today. Why? Because the gas companies got smart. They said, what are we beating each other up for here? This is stupid. Why don't we just fix the prices, and then we can raise them and hold them there at ridiculously high prices, and the public is going to have to pay the price. This is going on all over the world. You have prices in Venezuela for gas, 16 cents a gallon. Across the border in Colombia, it's $2.50 a gallon. What's the difference? It's gas, comes from the same part of the world. What's the difference? It's a fixing of pricing, something that should be absolutely illegal, but the government is so much involved in this that you cannot hardly believe it. Lust, fixing things. Now the government is nothing but a passageway for big business to get money out of the public. At any rate, lust. Number four, deadly sin, greed. And these kind of cross over. But greed, the wanting something for yourself, for me. This comes to me, and if I build these people around me and they do good, then I'll do even better. So I want those people to do good, not because I want good things for them. It's because I will do better. Greed. That's one of the seven deadly sins. Or the just wanting more for yourself. Being afraid that a disaster is coming. So you stockpile all of this stuff for you and you try and hide in a corner so nobody else will get it. That's one of the things, by the way, I disagree with. A lot of the it's a very subtle thing where you're dealing with disaster preparedness and people are preparing. Are you going to be a group of people helping each other, or are you going to be a person that hides within your confines with all of your stuff and nobody else gets any? Well, there's a fine line here, because if people had the chance to prepare and did not, and then they come up knocking on your door, and they were laughing at you before. Ah, look at that. He's a conspiracy theorist. He's just storing all that stuff. Ah, what a joke. You know, and then the disaster hits. Who's the first one at your door knocking on your door? That's the guy down the street that was making fun of you before. Oh, that's the guy that I'm going to send packing. He's going to be walking down the street the other way. No, that guy does not deserve help. Because he could have, it's the old ant and the grasshopper, there's many fables and tales and etc. regarding that. That the person had a chance to prepare, did not, and then comes a knocking at the guy who did prepare. That's different. But you should prepare for your loved ones, the ones around you, and have a system in place so you, in fact, can be prepared. But greed, look at the preparedness going into the government, the hierarchy in the government. and a lot of the CEOs of corporations where they're buying into cave cities or buying into these ships called arks, where you go out on the ocean and you have everything you need for 20 years and you buy into this. And how do you get the money to buy into this? Well, gee, I guess you just have to take it from everybody else, don't you? And so you can be saved. Greed, me, only for me. So I'm safe. How about the Bushes buying a big tract of land down in, what was it, Ecuador or Paraguay, wasn't it? Yeah. And the Bush girls went down there and were having lunch with the president, and they were setting all this up so they could have a place to go that was secure and safe for them. Where did they get all this money? Hey, they got it from you. That's where they got it. They didn't earn it on them. Little Junior never earned a dime in his life. It was all given to him. Somebody just passed it off and helped him out with his businesses. But there, the greed that I'm important, I get all of this for myself, I get ultra, ultra consideration in time of disaster, and everybody else up there, well, they'll die, most of them, but maybe some of them will live. But after all, we do need some slaves after this is all over, right? That's the attitude of some of these people. Greed. Everything for them. Anger. Anger. And by the way, greed in science is the same. Everything for me. My theory is correct. My funding is important. I'm going to make sure that guy over there doesn't get funding so I can get my funding. It's the same way. It's a very small kind of a world. And a lot of scientists will say, oh, it's not like that. But they'll say that until they're on the outside. And then all of a sudden, the rules change. Things are different. You bet. Okay, anger is the fifth deadly sin. Anger, now, I would say that the head of the geology department at Cornell, when I walked in that office that day, I sensed not just an opinion, I sensed not only his belief that he was right, I sensed anger. Anger that anybody would have the audacity to challenge what he knew. That just shouldn't happen because he's important. Anger. Anger then translates into other actions. Trying to destroy the other person. Trying to, and in my case, get the department where I worked to get rid of me as a teacher. Something that's actually illegal to get rid of a teacher for their opinion. But that's what they did. Not once, but twice. You know, and I'm recounting this because this is common in science. This is common in science. I'm talking about my own personal examples, but this is very common in science. That pecking order between scientists to dominate the scientific community with your opinion. Not with the facts, not with data, and in the case where the data contradicts what you do, heck with the data, throw it out. Because your position has to be maintained because you would look weak if all of a sudden the data came in and contradicted everything you'd been doing. And that's the case with the four axioms of astronomy. Astronomers get very angry when I talk to them and challenge their ideas. They find all kinds of ways. And what do they usually do? How does it come out? They try and divert the topic. When I'm at, say, an international scientific meeting and I'm talking to someone, let's say, about the solar wind, the differential electrical field in the solar wind. Well, they come up and then they try and sidetrack the topic into some other area which is really almost unrelated and try and give you some facts and then walk away like they have refuted something. No. But what does that show? It shows anger. It shows despondency. It shows that those scientists are not true scientists. They're not seekers of information and knowledge. They simply want to try and dispel it, and then they can go away and say, oh, yeah, well, I took care of that. No, they didn't take care of anything, only in their own mind. Let's go on to sloth. Oh, in science, The sixth deadly sin, sloth, basically another term for lazy. Scientists are, by their very nature, lazy. I can show you scientists that have not had a new thought in the past 20 years. They depend on what they learned before. They get a paycheck. They have a nice, easy life. They don't have to come in and work 40 hours. When they're working, they're sitting in a chair, or maybe they teach one class, or maybe they're flying around the world. But sloth is mixed into the scientific world because you don't have to think. You don't have to progress. You can just do the same thing every year. Look at NASA's moon program that was just canceled. 20 years to go to the moon, it began in about 2003 or 4, is when Bush Jr. announced, like he was trying to be like Kennedy, that we were going to go to the moon again. Well, at any rate, 20 years, NASA came up with a 20-year program. That means they don't have to do anything. That means that scientists on that program would retire and be collecting a pension long before any first probe would ever go off to the moon. Sloth, not doing anything in the scientific world of theoretical work. Once again, the axioms of astronomy, that the dirty snowball comet model, and there's no way it could possibly be true. None of the data supports it at all. But scientists can be lazy. They can just pretend that everything is going on the same. And so at any rate, the seventh deadly sin, gluttony. Gluttony. Consuming more than you need. Consuming more than you need. How does that apply to science? Well, what is a good scientist in a university? He's a guy that's getting more and more grants. Well, that means that there's a scientist over here that's not getting a grant. That means that one person gets more at the expense of someone else. We see this all the time in the economic world. For a person to be rich, somebody else has to be poor. Not just somebody, but lots of somebodies. Lots and lots and lots of somebodies. In fact, the richer you are, the more somebodies have to be poor to allow you to be rich. And in the scientific community, there are a few astronomers who dominate the scene. So gluttony, me, greed. Let me go through these again. Envy, pride, lust, greed, anger, sloth, gluttony. The seven deadly sins applied to science. But let's look at where this leads. Superstition, or denial, let's put it that way. Trust is something that is very important, and this is where this whole concept of this show came from this week. I was dealing with other people on the level of trust, on a personal trust basis. But what does lack of trust do? It creates paranoia. What does paranoia do? It changes one's mind. It changes one's attitude towards another person. Is that person telling the truth or is that person not telling the truth? And these are on just like very average, everyday kind of encounters. But still, imagine this on the level of international science, where one is trying to, one cannot be trusted. Take the scientists with the global warming, the UN scientists. They cannot be trusted. So what happens? The public becomes non-trusting of scientists in general, which it should, because of this entire process of the way scientists and science works. And that's why I'm trying to describe this, because it's very important that the public understand, how did these people get to these positions of high stature in the science world? How do you get on a UN panel? That's very difficult. How do you get to control the Center for Disease Control? How do you get to be the head of the WHO, the World Health Organization, that put out false statistics on many different, on SARS, on the swine flu, H1N1? These major national and international science organizations that are there for scientific credibility have been lying to the public repeatedly, especially when it comes to pandemics and epidemics and health issues. They have been lying, trying to get the public to get a flu shot. Lying, trust, paranoia. Who's making them do this? Who is getting them to do this? And see, once it starts, the lack of trust, the paranoia, then the other side has to do the same thing to stay in the game. Look at international politics. Other countries are trying to resist, but the U.S., for example, has think tanks. What do the think tanks do? They try and perceive world activity and then convert it and say, how can we control this? How can we control an election in another country that will benefit us? Very bizarre form of thinking, but that's what is going on. Then that breeds mistrust in other people, and now you have what I call the devil's workshop. The world, the devil must be just dancing on a tin drum in absolute delight at the state of the world today, because he's in control. Let me tell you, the politicians, the bankers, the war industry, the brutality of third world countries, towards its people, the unemployment rate, the absolute devastation economically going on in the world today. The devil is just having a wonderful time, and his seven deadly sins are at work at every stop, at every corner, where people don't think, and you have people working on a daily basis as a cog in the wheel, not really understanding that they're just working with the devil also to promote the wealthy people who are running this planet. And the bigger the stakes and the greater the stakes become, the greater the tendency to create misinformation. So what do we find? We find professional disinformation people who go to school. They have PhDs in lying. A disinformation specialist, his job or her job is to create misinformation, lies to the public, so that to change your perception. The 2003 May 15th Planet X thing with crazy lady talks to aliens. Oh my goodness, look at all of the effort that was put into this to demolish the concept of Planet X in the public's eye. Good grief. Somebody is busy at work. Envy, pride, lust, greed, anger, sloth, gluttony, trust, paranoia, lack of trust. Oh, the devil is having a wonderful time on this planet today. So how do you live with this? You simply take care of yourself, step back, and live an honest life with the people around you, the people that are important with you. And you have to be honest with yourself before you are honest with these other people. I said I'd repeat the water filter sale once again. And by the way, used to be $89.95 for a pair of the ceramic water filter elements. Now you can get four of them for $130. And the stainless steel water Dalton water filter, four elements, four ceramic white elements. And you use usually just one of them, so you have three spares. That one's $289, $130 for four of the ceramic filter elements. Address, JMCC, P.O. Box 58, Navarre, N-A-V-A-R-R-E, Minnesota, 55392. That's either $289 for the full water filter or $130 for the replacement four filter elements. And I'm out of time. This is Jim McCanny. This is my Science Hour. And as always, we are at the crossroads. Good night.